Hi, you're listening to York First Post Cricket Podcast. I am Vaibhav Shah, and today once again I'm accompanied by a couple of 80s kids, and we'll be talking about one of the memorable chapters in Indian cricket. Today, 35 years ago, India became the champions of champions in the first and the only World Championship of Cricket played in Australia in 1985-86. Very pleased to invite today's guests, Gaurav Kalra and Devendra Prabhudesai. If you've been listening to our podcast, they have obviously been a part of the Tendulkar episode, which was done earlier on 15th of November. And today, again, I'm very happy to have you both here. Gaurav Kalra is, of course, the group sports editor at Network 18. And Devendra Prabhudesai, author, biographer, and former media manager at the BCCI. So, glad to have you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Vaibhav. My pleasure.
Tell me your personal memories. You know, I just want to start off knowing about that tournament, because there's very little which I think has been passed on to the next generation. So I would like you to go ahead with telling me some of your personal memories.
So, you know, as they say, it's difficult to stay at the top. It's a lot easier to reach the top. And the World Championship of Cricket victory proved that the Indian team was capable of staying at the top. This happened 18 months after the 1983 World Cup win. Many people had dismissed the 1983 World Cup win as a fluke, a one-off, because you don't beat a team like the West Indies. But we proved 18 months later, there were eight members of the 83 team who were also part of the 1985 Indian team. They went on to win the World Championship of Cricket in Australia. It was a comprehensive victory, more comprehensive than 83, because we won five matches out of five, all by comprehensive margins.
I know, Vaibhav, I'm sure you have, as you go forward and you take us through this conversation, we'll talk about some of the games and memories of that kind. But I, thinking back to that time, I was not 10 yet. I'm a little older than Dev, so he was probably about 8. I was about 9.
Almost 9.
Yeah, so I was about 9. And so the memories of that, while the, while the specific games and things we'll talk about, one of the things that really grabbed you by the collar is this spectacle of cricket in Australia that you hadn't seen before, from Australia that you hadn't seen before, especially with participation from your own players. It isn't like India hadn't played the day-night, one-day cricket. It isn't. But, and in fact had done so in Australia as well. I think, if I'm not mistaken, they had played. However, it all came together on the in this sort of very Australian way of presenting cricket. It was Channel 9's coverage. It wasn't as, formal as the coverage one was used to seeing from England. It wasn't in whites. The clothes were flashy. The crowds were very casual. For the first time, you noticed things like people sunbathing at grounds, alcohol around at grounds. And cricket as this liberating, fun experience was something that really stuck with me as a sort of 9-year-old at the time. You kind of felt like, wow, this is something very different. This is fun. And the crowd that's there is enjoying cricket, but it's also just out there to have a really good time. And you didn't, it's taken for granted now, Vaibhav, so much. But at that time, it felt very new, very fresh. And then, of course, as the tournament started to unfold, India played so well.
And in fact, it was the first tournament played in Australia, which was telecast live in India. That too, the first two matches were not telecast live. So it was the third game against Australia, which was telecast live. I guess the authorities, the ministry, the INB ministry realized that India is doing rather well. So we might as well telecast the matches live. And as Gaurav said, it was a spectacle. And I remember being really impressed with that Daddles the Duck figure, which would accompany the batsman, who failed to trouble the scorers. That was one of the many attractions.
There are many attractions. Things like Vaibhav, at that time in Australia, in those big Australian grounds, there was no boundary rope. So you were always kind of taken in by that. Oh, there's no boundary rope. So to get four runs, you actually had to hit the fence.
Yes.
Rather than actually cross a boundary rope. So that was something that, you kind of thought, wow, this is so new. all these little things. And then, of course, the quality of the broadcast, hearing Ian Chappell for the first time properly and Richie Beno coming into your drawing room. And I, at least, I don't know if Dave's family had, but our family had a black and white TV set at the time.
Same here, same here. We had a black and white TV.
We didn't have a color set till the 86 World Cup football. So the on the black and white set, you could tell this is a razzmatazz of color. And you know, that really stays with a young kid.
No matter, I don't think so, how much you describe it, today's generation is going to find it really difficult to understand this. But about India, it was a dramatic start in a lot of sense, you know, with the captaincy of Sunil Gavaskar, he, you know, giving it up and then eventually captaining the side, and then we emerged as winners. How was the scenario played out in terms of, like, from a fan's perspective? Around that time, what were you thinking? Okay, what's happening? What is it?
It was a tumultuous phase. So after the 83 World Cup, the West Indies came to India, beat us badly.
Correct.
The captaincy changed hands once again. Mr. Gavaskar was appointed for the 84-85 season. England toured India and they ended up beating us on our pitches. And Mr. Gavaskar was the captain. He had a very poor series with the bat. And we had this situation where the team was in Chandigarh. And the selectors were meeting in another hotel. So the team was at one hotel and the selectors were at another hotel meeting to pick the team for the World Championship of Cricket in Australia. And there was a lot of talk that maybe Ravi Shastri or Mohinder Amarnath is going to get the job. Sunil Gavaskar will definitely not get it because after all, he has led India to defeat on home soil. But what happened is that they decided to appoint him. It was not unanimous, obviously. But they appointed him, and the story goes, Mr. Gavaskar has written in his book One Day Wonders that he got a message from the selectors telling him to join them at their hotel because they had picked the captain. He was the captain and now he was supposed to join them to pick the rest of the squad. But the instructions conveyed to him that night were, when you leave the hotel, don't take the exit, scale the wall. And there's a car waiting for you on the other side of the road. So it was all like really, you know, cloak and dagger stuff. And apparently Mr. Gavaskar, when he was in the act of scaling the wall, he decided that I have had enough. Whatever happens after this series, I am quitting the job for good.
Yeah, and also remember at that time, this is the pre-internet time, Vaibhav. You've never lived in an age of this kind. So information was at a premium, and you know, 9-year-olds don't read that much newspaper stuff, and
definitely,
you know, so you would not have like the intimate details of what's going on. I think you figured out these things much later when you've read books like One Day Wonders and things like that. But Sunny Gavaskar decided not only that he was not going to remain, this was going to be his farewell as captain and not going to be in this race anymore or this musical chairs with Kapil, but also decided that he wasn't, for the first time probably in his career, willingly not open the batting. I know he'd done that in the Chennai test when he got 230 odd, but in this case, so this squad that came together, they've mentioned that 8 of the players were from the 1983 team, but also there was this injection of youth into the squad, this kind of vivacity that was suddenly introduced. Sadanand Vishwanath, wicketkeeper, L. Shivaramakrishnan went on to have a great tournament. I'm sure we'll talk about him. Shastri himself, really young, I think 22, 23 at the time. Chetan Sharma, this quick bowler. All these guys introduced into the squad. So 83 was almost, an era was being left behind with the introduction of these new faces who were going to be kind of India's premier cricketers going forward, or at least identified as such. Unfortunately, Shiva and Sadanand Vishwanath didn't have as long careers as they should have had, but this was an indication.
So it was in a sense a symbolic reflection of the new Indian team as well as the new glamour which was attached to the one-day cricket, white balls and giant side screen and floodlights and everything happening. So both were, I think, coinciding in that sense.
Yeah, and there was an interesting prelude to the selection of the team, what Gaurav mentioned. During the series against England, I mean, they beat us 2-1 in the test series, 3-1 in the one-day series. But they played a three-day game against an under-22 team captained by Ravi Shastri. Mm-hmm. And the under-22 team beat England in less than 3 days. A comprehensive win. And that team comprised all the players who were then part of the World Championship of Cricket team. There was Shastri, who was the captain. There was Shivaramakrishnan, Krishnamachari Srikanth, and the wonder kid Mohammad Azharuddin.
Yes, of course. Don't forget Azhar, because 84, he'd come through with those three centuries in the test in the test series against England on the trot in his debut series. And then he was the wonder kid at the time. He was really the pre-Tendulkar.
So I wanted to know about the players you've also mentioned. You know, they changed the style of play also. There was some sort of pinch hitting. Krishnamachari Srikanth was playing over the top, which was not seen before. So, in a sense, it was a very novel thing to see an Indian team perform like that, despite them winning a World Cup 20 months ago and then revolutionizing this form of game. It is, if I have to explain to this generation, was it a bit like IPL? Is it fair to say that?
I don't think it is fair to compare it with IPL directly, but at that point of time, there were certain things that the Indian team did in the World Championship of Cricket that had not been seen earlier. So, case in point is Krishnamachari Srikanth. Although he had played that electrifying innings in the 83 World Cup final, he did that on a more sustained basis in the World Championship of Cricket. Yeah. I think if memory serves me right, he had 350s, including one in the final for which he got the Player of the Final award. So, hitting over the top, that was, in later years, you saw Sanath Jayasurya, Mark Greatbatch, Adam Gilchrist, Virender Sehwag, of course. But Krishnamachari Srikanth can be called the pioneer of hitting over the top in the initial overs. Another very critical thing that India did was using spin as an attacking option. Yeah. Because at that point, spinners, it sounds difficult to believe, but the early 80s was a phase when it was believed that spinners really had no role to play in limited overs cricket. I mean, Abdul Qadir, Dilip Doshi, Wasim Raja, they had won a few games for their countries, but not on a sustained basis. But in the World Championship of Cricket, we fielded two spinners in the 11 in every game, and both as attacking options, Shastri and Sivaramakrishnan. That was also, that had not been seen before.
Yeah, and in fact, India took all 10 wickets in each of the five games that they played in the tournament,
except in the final,
yeah, where they picked up 9. And this attacking middle over option was something that, you know, that in later years we come to identify it with Chahal and Kuldeep of late, things of that kind. But the leg spinner in Australia, and really it's hard to describe to this generation what a sensation Shiva was, you know, because not only was he very young, but he was also someone who was a player after Australian hearts, because he would really rip the leg break. He would really turn the ball across the face of the bat. He would also be an attacking option in the truest sense of the word, because he was always going for wickets. And he was working in consonance with Sadanand Vishwanath, who was like this bundle of energy behind the stumps. So you had this kind of, interplay going on between this really magical wrist spinner and this a very excitable wicketkeeper who would stump and then kind of be the energy and the Duracell man for the team almost. So you felt like this was a different, energetic and very vibrant Indian team. So I think it really connected with young people. But I think all of that, Vaibhav, has to be the credit for all of that connection that the 85 team established has to be given to the TV coverage, because suddenly these players felt like they were in your living room, that they were performing for you. They were, artists in the night. And it was because you got close-ups, you got vision of the team celebrating, you got these player interviews, you got this sense of fun and adventure. And it was in a time when the 80s was a bit of a dreary time, you know, sort of license, Kota Raj, all of that. Suddenly there was this sort of free-flowing energy from the cricket team. Very different to 83, I have to say, although I don't remember 83 very well, but 85 really felt like a very significant point in India's cricket.
And talking about that class of 1985, whether it was Shiva or Azharuddin or Srikanth, the one common factor was that they were all great fielders. Sivaramakrishnan was a magnificent fielder. And that made a huge impression on us, because Indian fielding was, you know, to put it as politely as possible, pedestrian. I mean, you had Eknath Solkar and, you know, others, but those were exceptions more than the rule.
Yeah.
We always had good catchers, but the fielding was always pedestrian. But this was a generation that did not mind hurling itself all over, you know, and making those great throws.
Yeah.
You tell me a lot of great things about the tournament, and from India's perspective, of course, they went on to win and in such a significant manner, beating Pakistan in the finals. But do you guys feel, when we talk about 80s, you remember the West Indies of the 80s, the World Cup, the emergence of Azharuddin, Wasim Akram, Waqar Yunus, Tendulkar, from an Asia's perspective, this World Championship, is it lost somewhere in terms of passing on the legacy? it's not had the same sort of connect to the next generation. Am I wrong, or you guys can correct me if I am?
Yeah, probably because the team, for whatever reason, could not build on that success. And the stars, a couple of the stars, as Gaurav mentioned, they could not really stay on in the Indian team. I guess there was lack of consistency that proved to be their undoing. And the next couple of years, we did relatively well. We almost won a test series in Australia. We beat England.
Yeah.
But we could have done a lot better.
Yeah, but I think that as a spectacle, and I know I keep coming back to this, Vaibhav, but I think as a spectacle, that World Championship has remained etched in people's memories. In fact, if you ask a lot of people of that generation, I don't know if Dev agrees, but if you ask a lot of people of that generation, they'll recall matches from this series a lot more than a lot of the Sharjah games that India was involved in.
I completely agree.
Because India played a lot of cricket at Sharjah. Cricket at Sharjah felt very familiar. In the sense, it was red ball, white clothes, the coverage was okay, so-so, the commentary was okay, so-so. Here was something that was very collar-grabbing for young Indian people. And I think that's the reason why those 85 clips remain. You know, Weber, we take certain things for so granted for now, but I remember very distinctly the sounds from that tournament.
Mm.
Because it was for the first time that you felt that on TV, you sensed when a ball hit a stump that it made a sound that you could hear. You don't, you didn't hear that so much when India was playing in England, or you know, the coverage that we got at home was absolutely ridiculous at that time, or Sharjah. But here was, you know, you heard the sound. I know before we came on, we were talking about Kapil's Yorker in the final, and it just, I'm now reminded of that, not so much just as a beautiful delivery that got past the left-hander, I think, Asim Umar.
He was right-hander, went through his defense.
But if you heard the sound of the ball hitting the stumps, that was a very rare thing for us to hear.
And even the sound of the bat striking ball.
Yeah,
it was,
and
like,
these interviews massive. That were done so professionally at the end of the game with Ian Chappell there and Rishi Benoit there, Tony Greig there. These were things that really stuck in memory. And you felt like, oh, you know, cricket can be really fun. And that tournament emphasized that bit for us.
Talking about fun, somebody who symbolized fun at that point of time became the champion of champions, Ravi Shastri. Was it his finest hour?
It was. I think that entire season of 84-85 was his best season, because I think he scored three test centuries. He became only the second cricketer to hit six sixes in an over in first-class cricket in the same season. And then, of course, the crowning glory was him being crowned champion of champions. And the icing on the cake was, after this tournament, we went to Sharjah. We won a four-nation tournament in Sharjah. We came back and Mumbai played Delhi in the Ranji Trophy final. And Shastri took 8 wickets in the fourth innings to bowl Mumbai to a win. So that was Ravi Shastri's greatest season, 84-85.
And on top of that, an Audi.
An Audi, of course.
Yeah,
of course.
And you know, the Audi also, from the point of view of the impression it left on people's minds. Think back to being a kid in 85, walking out onto the road. And what are the cars that you see? You see an Ambassador.
Fiat.
And you see a Fiat. And really, you don't see anything else. The Maruti came in a little bit later. But the idea of the swanky car was something so rare. And for a player to win a car of that kind, like, you know, you could have a tournament today, someone could win a Ferrari. It won't really make that much of an impression on minds. Whereas Ravi Shastri winning that Audi was something that left people in awe. We're like, wow, I mean, you know, they really need to see this car. And that's the reason. Here we are 35 years later and everybody remembers that car. In fact, I think on one of, on a television show, I think it's Gaurav Kapoor's show, Breakfast
right.
with Champions, he
He's
mentioned,
an Audi man.
Yeah, he mentioned the car got so damaged because of the celebration that happened after they won the tournament, that they actually gave him a different car. So the one that was seen on the outfield wasn't the one he actually got back to India. But the Audi again is, you know, part of our childhood, so to speak.
It was shipped to India a few weeks later. And Rajiv Gandhi, who was then the Prime Minister of India, he waived customs duty as a special gesture. Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay. Before I start to wrap it up, I would like to know, where does, of course, we've spoken about the spectacle and everything and the emergence of so many cricketers, so many young blood especially. But where does it, if we have to rank it in the history of Indian cricket, where does this one rank?
Well, my personal view, Gaurav may not agree with me. I do believe that with due respect to the two World Cup winning teams of 83 and 2011, the 85 team was our best ODI team of all time.
Really?
In terms of the variety, the depth, the options, the bowling options, the quality of fielding, and the blend of experience and youth. I personally believe that was our best limited overs team of all time.
Oh, wow. It was a very impressive performance. You know, in the 83 World Cup, India lost games. They lost to the West Indies in the group stage. They lost to Australia. They were 17 for 5 against Zimbabwe. They had a tight semi-final, and then, you know, and that final everyone talks about. This tournament, India went not just unbeaten, but like they've referenced earlier, they were dominant right throughout the tournament. So, yeah, it had the makings of a great team. It was also lovely in the end. I remember when Sunny Gavaskar went up and took the trophy. It was a very sleek, beautifully designed trophy, like cylindrical, walked up. And he, you know, in the classy way that you came to associate with him, he picked it up with one hand and beautifully made that gesture of showing it to the Indian audiences. And you kind of felt like it was the starting of the fading away of Sunny Gavaskar from Indian cricket. So it was kind of an emotional moment there as well. His last as captain, didn't have much of a role as batsman. As I said, he dropped himself down into the middle order. But kind of this elder statesman who's bringing together these, energetic young players. And also, you know, Weber, a lot of stereotypes get broken at that time. It was the first display of, in many ways, an Indian team with alcohol and, you know, in a sort of front of vision manner like that, where people could see it inside a dressing room, having fun inside that Audi at the end of it. Even the 83 team was lined up when Kapil went and took that trophy, and then the celebrations were really in the crowd. This team celebrated almost with the crowd that was there at the MCG that night. So that was
driving around the MCG.
Yeah, you had Mohinder Amarnath perched on the bonnet with a bottle in his hand.
Yeah.
It was great fun. And looking talking about the comprehensive nature of the wins, look at the margins. First match, we beat Pakistan by 6 wickets. Second match, we beat England by 86 runs. Third match, we beat Australia by 8 wickets. Semi-finals, we beat New Zealand by 7 wickets. And then we beat Pakistan in the final again by 8 wickets. Comprehensive, you know, thorough wins.
And teams were competing. There was serious cricket. It was not just
of course.
Fun.
Yeah.
I also wanted to know that, you know, 85 had this whole glamour thing. But again, in 87, we saw the white kids coming back for the World Cup, I'm talking about. And then eventually in 92, it got picked up again. Was there some sort of resistance during the 85 series that, you know, we're not liking this form of cricket and something like that?
No, the 87 World Cup was played in India and Pakistan. So they did it the traditional way. You had the games in whites. There was no night cricket at that time. 1992, being in Australia and New Zealand, the Australians had to do things differently.
Hmm.
So that World Cup was the first to have colored clothing, floodlights, white balls.
Hmm.
And then a few years later, then by that time, in 1993, we had the Hero Cup. I think the Hero Cup, It merits a separate discussion of its own.
Sure.
That really made like night cricket popular in India, because we had Eden Gardens being embellished with floodlights. And then, of course, 1996 World Cup, most of the leading grounds like Mumbai, Bangalore, Chennai, they all got floodlights. And thereafter, India became the, you know, home of cricket.
This was a very Australian event. It was a very Australian event. And I also thought that it was a way for Australia to identify itself as such a distinct cricket culture from the rest of the world, where everything else is very formalized, very traditional, whereas Australia was breaking the norm and producing or creating a brand of cricket, obviously because of its television contracts with the Kerry Packer and Channel 9, creating a brand of cricket which was not going to conform to the way cricket was played outside. And I think that resistance Australia would have, most cases, would have been just brushed aside, because at the end of it, India came out of that tournament, smelling of roses.
Absolutely. On that note, I would like to, you know, wrap this up. It was a larger than life tournament is what I get a sense of it. It's some great cricket, and I believe it brought cricket and the spectator, even miles away, very close, and it became intimate in a lot of sense, because the coverage, which is a major impact, the media is playing a huge role in it. was done to its finest form at that point of time. Thank you, Devendra Prabhu Desai. Thank you, Gaurav Kalra, for joining us on this episode. Keep listening to York. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Vaibhav. Thank you for inviting me.